It's nice to see some familiar friends. You see, I don't use the term familiar friends. And the last time that I was here, the tongs weren't here, the altar was here, and the floor was uneven. So it's been some time since I've been here. The transformations are... It's a beautiful space. And since I've accepted to become ordained, I've been interested to see how my life has unfolded. And I've read my way through 82 volumes of the Pali Canon. I committed myself to a study of the Vinaya and took on a Vinaya master. I've taken to the vows of poverty in the really old traditional ways, the way the matriarchs and patriarchs that came before me prior to the mid-19th century in Japan, the way they lived. And I wanted to see what was embodied in these teachings, what was embodied in the way they lived their lives. I've, for the last several months, I've been reading and rereading the Denko Roku. This transmission of light. And the driving theme through the Denko Roku is the sole purpose of practice. The sole purpose of practice being awakening. My choice of words, awakening. I have the privilege to travel all over the world, interesting, eh? And I have no money, and I have no home, I have no insurance, no retirement, no health coverage, nothing. And I travel all over the world. And I travel all over the world by invitation. I come because people, well, at least initially, people want me to come. It's also true that I often get invited back. So that says something. And although, like, I haven't been in this region for, I guess, 7 or so years. It's interesting, I'm meeting people who heard that I was in the region, who come to one day sessions that I facilitated or talks that I've done, who met me 7, 10, 13 years ago. And they remember. And that's somehow really moving to me. Because what I understood when I accepted to become ordained, what I understood is there's a responsibility to that, that I couldn't know. And I understood that because of the life that I have come out of. Or let's say one of my previous incarnations now. Don't be confused. I'm not talking about, like, you know, in my life, my 40 previous lives as a monk or something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in this existence. In the years that I've lived in this form, I have experienced several incarnations. So I've come to understand a lot of these sort of very basic Buddhist teachings in very organic, very organic ways. I've spent a lot of time in Asia, very interesting. I show up in Asia, Caucasian, with a black robe, and people don't know that I'm a Buddhist monk, and they say, "Well, if you're not Asian, you can't be Buddhist." And I thank them, and I bow to them, and I continue to do what I do because I know that's not the truth. The truth is that it rests in the place that the examples have demonstrated to me through the Denko Roku. The truth rests in this place of awakening. It's easy to drop Buddhistic terms. It's easy to throw in a few Pali words and a few Sanskrit terms and sound impressive. What's most important for me, and what has always been important for me, is to be able to embrace the full body of teaching. Not just the particular strain of it, but the full body of teaching. Then look within my own lineages and traditions to see how these teachings matured from generation to generation, from culture to culture, and then to see how they manifest themselves in my life. If I cannot articulate the full body of teachings in a language that is accessible to the population at large, then I don't understand it. It's just a cloak that I've wrapped myself up in. And life is too precious for me to do that. And at the conclusion of every day for me, I do a recitation. I don't actually know the correct name for it. Life, death, verse, or the evening gatha, or something like this. The recitation is, let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time passes swiftly by and opportunity is lost. Each of us must strive to awaken. Awaken. Take heed. Do not squander this life. I'm constantly in reflection about my life. Constantly in reflection about the many manifestations I've experienced in this life. I'm constantly in reflection on the karma which I have inherited. I'm constantly in reflection, not only from the karma that I've inherited through past generations, but the karma that I've inherited from the collective conscious of which I'm a part. By traveling and living in amongst different cultures and different customs, I get an opportunity to look at this conditioning from various angles of perception. I find it incredibly supportive and helpful to me. I find it incredibly humbling to me. I burn to wake up without any idea what that means or what that would hold in store for me or whether it's happened or not happened. I just burn for that. And I commit my life to that, not in a particular way, but in a very consequent way. I'm deeply indebted to the wisdom and information and knowledge that's been passed down through 82 generations of teachers to me. I'm incredibly loyal to the craft that's been passed on to me. Through the lineage which I'm ordained into. And I understand that these things aren't the practice for me. These things are simply the tools that support me when I'm assaulted by the nature of all this karma that I've inherited, when my mind tells me that I don't need to do something or that my mind has me sort of spinning my relationship with reality in a way that suits me. It doesn't bring me to a place of discomfort. Spiritual practice, as I experience it, is not comfortable, convenient, or easy. It's really very hard work. And I embrace it because I understand through the mere consequence of having been a soldier and living with the reality of that, of the after effects of that, or the continuing effects of that, the consequence of not willing, being willing to wake up. And each day I'm having a Rick Perry moment. All right, good. I also watch TV, you know. 21st Century Monk, right? Yeah. In one of the recitations that I do, a piece of that recitation is translated to read, "This way of living is the best in the world." And it's absolutely correct for me. This way of living is the best in the world. It was yesterday, it is today, and we'll see about tomorrow. But this way of living is simply the best in the world. Committed, consequent, and ruthlessly introspective. Now, I've followed my way of thinking, and really I lived a very disciplined life. To be in the military, one must be disciplined. If one is not disciplined, especially in combat, one dies. So I lived an incredibly disciplined life. My training was intense and powerful, and I believed that what I was doing was the correct thing. I was absolutely convinced about it. Convinced to the point that without even fluttering on an inhale or an exhale, I killed people. Now, the killing of people, as I understand, takes on many forms. It doesn't exist just through the physical act of taking someone's life. The 12 interconnected laws of causation. Right there rests, it right there it identifies and explains the process through which killing can take place in thought, speech, or action. So what this commitment to this spiritual practice, and that's how I experience this, what I am embraced by, the commitment to this spiritual practice, this commitment to waking up, is to be conscious of the subtle and more subtle and more subtle manifestations of that karma which I have inherited, which tells me that a particular idea it tells me my ideas are good ideas. Whenever I think I have a good idea, I'll write an email to Catherine, or I'll check with two other people that I know, and just to see whether my idea is a good idea or not. It's very important to have a community of like-minded people that are not struggling for position and power and authority and recognition. The community of like-minded people that are supportive of each other in their quest to live differently. It's important that that community be supported by an authentic teacher. And because I have institutional certifications doesn't necessarily make me authentic. So it's in this quest to wake up, because that is the only point to do this. This quest, which is really not a quest, but in this quest to wake up, I have to constantly ask myself, what am I willing to do? And then listen to the still small voices that tell me that I don't have to do that. I want the world to be different. And I realize that world and self are not two things. Before I read the Denko Roku, I also read through the Shobogenzo. The Doko Renko seems to be simply a refinement of the central themes that run through the Shobogenzo. But there's a teaching in the Shobogenzo, very important to me. So important that I actually have it tattooed on the back of my neck. It's a tattoo of the original, well, I don't know, the original calligraphy block prints. I don't know if it is or not. That's what they said, and that's what they wrote in the thing, you know. But the teaching is Shoji. Shoji. Life, death. In life, there is death. In death, there is life. While life through birth is a finite experience and death through the cessation of this form is a finite experience, they are not two things. They're not one. They're not two. I'm really fortunate that even though I'm a person of strong intellect, I don't think about this stuff too much. Because the moment I start to think about this stuff, I'm in trouble. So when I read through, when I commit myself to a study, like when I read through the Avatamsaka Sutra, man, it's a book about that thick, with little tiny print. When I read through that, I don't really think about what they're saying. You know, when you do this recitation before the Dharma talk about, I just have to smile. Hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas, and I go, wow, what? My mind goes, what? What's this? It's like you read in the Avatamsaka Sutra and they're going 10,000 million billions of sands of grains in the Ganges and this and that and the next thing, and they go, what's that have to do with eating lunch? So I'm fortunate that I don't really think about it too much, that I just read it. Because a long time ago somebody said to me, because I used to get very overwhelmed because when you would talk to me, I thought that I had to intellectually grasp everything that you were saying, and if I didn't intellectually grasp it, then there was something not working right with me. But waking up has not much to do with the intellect. The intellect often gets in my way. The intellect only becomes a tool if it's not integrated into speech and action. Then I need to sit a little bit more. I need to be quiet a bit more. The discipline of this practice came naturally for me. I blossom in it. It feels right. To be precise, so when I do prostrations, you know, visualizing, sliding my hands under the seated Buddha, visualizing, lifting that Buddha up and setting that Buddha down. Being very precise about this. And I tell you, when I watch people do prostrations and they go like this, and I just go, oh. Because I see the little chubby guy falling over. And, you know. There's a reason for the preciseness of it. It's about training my wild mind to be steady. Because my mind, my intellect still wants to think that it's the master of all things. And I have to constantly remember that my mind is simply a product, my thoughts and all that come through me are a product of all that karma which I've inherited. That I need to come to that place of understanding beyond intellect. That's the place of awakening. That which is defined as the absolute realm, so that because it's there, it's in that place where all things can be known. In the silence, in the stillness, in the heart of not knowing. Questions? Ask me.
When you hear truth, do you feel it? When you hear truth, do you feel it?
What is my truth?
When do you know when you've been presented with truth?
Yeah, like, well, yes. It's a knowing that transcends thoughts, feelings, or perceptions. It really is just a knowing. A knowing that violence is never a solution. A knowing that anger only gets more anger, hatred only gets more hatred, greed only gets more greed. It's irrefutable, and I'm not willing to argue about it. I just know it. You know, I know it to the... I mean, have you ever been so concentrated that you can actually feel the blood flow in your fingernails? Have you ever been so concentrated? You haven't, or you would know. You haven't, or you would know. And then you would understand, knowing that I'm speaking about. I'm very sorry that I lack the ability to articulate this state. I do the best I can with words to point at it. But what I hope to be able to do is to manifest it through the way in which I live my life. Yeah? So that knowing, it's not a feeling. It's not a feeling, and it's not other than a feeling. It's not a thought, and it's not other than a thought. It's not a sensation, it's not other than a sensation. You just know. Here's an example of how it has worked. I don't know when this happened. And I have what's termed as a... I was talking with Catherine earlier about this. I have what's termed a highly disturbed sleep pattern. I haven't slept more than 2 hours consecutively in any night since 1967. I still don't. And I used to, oh, I used to struggle with this. I had all these things where you're supposed to sleep and you have to sleep and this is the way you have to sleep and if you don't, then something is on. I had all this noise going on in my head. And I did all sorts of things to try and get myself to conform to all of the ideas of how I had to be okay. And all I did was create more suffering for me because it just wasn't working. Now, when I entered into, when I really submitted to this path of practice that geared towards awakening and not even knowing really at the time that's what I was doing, after some years, I had 3 or 4 years, I was living in a small hermitage. I was washing dishes, looking out the window, and I had this still, small voice of awareness. It said to me, and I mean awareness, it's not a psychotic voice. I know those. So it was this voice of awareness that said, oh, you know, so you don't sleep. Now what? And that moment was just that pure moment of awareness and acceptance. Just like that. All I could do was laugh. From then on, I haven't had any issue with the way that I sleep. Because it's not that I sleep or don't sleep. The way that I sleep, it was an acceptance. This is how this is. This is like this because that was like that. And with that acceptance came a measure of peace that is unexplainable. Yeah. Question? Yes, please. No, I don't hear so well, so.
Neither.
What?
What does it have to do with eating lunch?
Depends on how you prepare the food. Next question. Please.
Could you speak a little about trauma and practice? How they can practice all trauma.
Actually, nothing helps trauma unless we want it to. So practice in and of itself won't do anything. It really depends on what we want. Now, in this whole issue around trauma, and then how we are affected by that, and then all of these theories and practices and things generated to heal trauma. From my own experience, within the basis of all of that lies a very... There's an absence of understanding about the very nature of healing. See, healing is not the absence of suffering. Transformation is not the absence... It's not going beyond suffering. Healing is learning to live in a conscious and different relation and establishing a different relationship with our suffering. It's the acceptance of this is like this. I was invited just a couple of days ago to do a talk to a Theravadan community in San Francisco. And they had a microphone set up like this. But I didn't know it. And there was a small short in one of the wires, and when they would move it, it popped. And when it popped, I react. Because the pop, I mean, it's just a sharp, unexpected noise. It doesn't sound like a gun. I know what they sound like, but still it's that sharp noise like a gun. And the second time I moved, it popped. And I reacted to it again. They called it a severe startle reaction. I reacted to it again. Then somebody told me what it was. The third time they moved in and it popped, I still had the reaction, but I knew what it was. The first time, I thought I was shot. The second time, I was looking to see who else was shot. The third time, I was looking for the holes in the wall. At the same time, knowing that it was just the microphone popping. So it's being able to hold the complex and multiplicity of realities that exist in any given moment. Without a disciplined spiritual practice rooted in self-reflection, with the understanding that healing is not the absence of suffering, then healing is then only an illusion from my perspective. Question. Yeah.
So good to see you.
Very nice to see you too. We're just speaking about you on the way down. Nicely, we were speaking about you. And when I say we, I'm talking about Kenshin and I.
You know, I'm going to have to ask the same question I asked like 10 years ago.
You remember? Wow.
It's just the same question that I have all the time.
Uh-huh.
And you're an important teacher for me on that question. But, you know, it's about practicing with anger.
Uh-huh.
Practicing with feelings of anger and rage and the suffering that creates for self and others, and just, you know, I'm not even sure what the question is, but it's just, can you speak about it?
I forgot how to be angry. I forgot how to be angry, so I don't know. You know. Again, it comes back to the same response I gave over here to the trauma question. I have to be willing to live in a different relationship with these responses to the world around me that I call angry or rageful. I mean, I don't know if they are or they aren't. I mean, I know I respond, I respond differently today than I did 2 years ago, than I did 5 years ago, than I did 10 years ago. And I just experienced, I just had an experience which for me was quite an intense example of betrayal. See, I know betrayal at the highest of levels. A betrayal of trust that costs lives. The betrayal of the government and the promises the government made to me. A betrayal of the responsibility that parents have to children. I experience betrayal at this highest of levels. Now, recently, there's a documentary filmmaker wants to make a film about the way they call it, about the work that about my life and the work that I do, and I'm not sure whether to do it or not to do it. I'm not sure that it's important to do it, but they really like to do it, so I'm going through a process with them. And so I had an interaction with the filmmaker, and they wanted me to just sign a generic release. And I said, no. And if this is a film about me and the life that I live, the work that I do, nobody can evaluate whether what you've put on film is accurate or not other than me. So you're going to have to give me that. You're going to forgive me that. So I'm not going to just sign the rights over to you. But I will submit some kind of an agreement that will cover these, which we've already talked about 2 months before. So I submitted it to the filmmaker, and the filmmaker obviously didn't want to deal with it, so passed it on to somebody else who I didn't know. And that other person called me up and started to talk to me about this. And I went, wait a minute, this ain't right. Yeah. I go, wait, this ain't right, man, what's this about? And then all of a sudden things started to shift and change as a way to sort of manipulate the circumstances into the position they wanted to be so they could get what they wanted. And what I did is I came back to practice, because of course the anger starts to manifest itself, and I want to go, yeah, well, fight or flight. You know, I want to shoot them or never talk to them again. So because I want to live in a different relation with this, and I know that these reactions are not going to, I know that these reactions are a natural part of who I am, then when I was confronted with these strong feelings, I just come back to my breath, and I just hold steady to basic principles. This practice is not about fame or gain. Whether this film is made or not made is irrelevant to me. It's not going to have an impact on what I do and what I continue to do until I absolutely cannot do it anymore. And if it's going to be done, then it's going to be done in a way that makes sense to me in relation with them. So I just say, you need to decide what the film is going to be about, and you're going to have to let me have this. If you don't give me this, this film won't be made. So it was this moment of anger, strong feelings rising up and not surrendering to them. But those strong feelings become the single point of concentration. And I allow them just to go through the natural process that they will go to. It's like coming into existence, observing and passing away. But this cycle, it will continue. These feelings come into existence, I watch them and they pass away. I don't want to grab onto them, I don't want to hold onto them, I don't want to use them in the ways in which I did. Because it's easy for me to see the consequences of that in my life. The whole notion that I understand through all of those sutras that I've read and the commentaries that I've read is that that my awakening is not for me. It's for the benefit of all existence. So, I want to be a different force in the world. I don't want to be just to continue to recycle these endless streams of inherited karma. I want the opportunity to experience this transmigration from realm to realm. And so, because I want that, and because that's really what I want for my life, I give up that identity so that I can become these tools that I learn here in these halls support me in becoming. As long as I don't have any idea what that's supposed to be, and I let it go. Even though sometimes I do have ideas, I let them go.
When the willingness to suffer the consequences is high and the attachment to the anger is high, how do you work with yourself then?
My anger doesn't get so high anymore. It just doesn't. I have a son. My son's 39. I haven't always been a monk. And my son, several years ago, my son fell into a space of not being able to communicate with me, not being able to respond to my communications. He wouldn't return my calls, my emails, my text messages. You know, 21st century monk, you know, do all that stuff. And when he finally came back in contact with him, I asked him, this is in line with this issue of trauma, because he is a reincarnation of me. He has inherited karma from me. Not only from me, this is what I have to be cautious about, but from me. So I asked him, I said, is there anything that I did that sort of activated this response? He said, no. There's nothing that I've done. He said, nothing you did. He said, when I don't feel good about myself, it's hard for me to be in contact with people. And once I'm not in contact with them, it just snowballs. It's easier to stay not in contact with them. Now, it happened again. February. Now, in between, when we were in contact, I said, at that time, you know, I really understand. Because I do understand how easy it is to just not want to deal with anybody. Just to sort of isolate and suck into myself. Because I just hurt so much. And nobody knows, and I want everybody to know. But nobody knows. And I am convinced that nobody would ever be able to understand or empathize. And so I said, if it happens again, and it may, please know that 3 days are important to me. So I just want a proof of life during those 3 days. I said Father's Day, Veterans Day, and my birthday. Just connect with me, let me know you're okay. Now, he did that this year. He remembered. This was several years ago. He remembered. I got an email on Father's Day, and his name is Zachary, so he's love Zach. I mean, he wrote some stuff. But I get an email on Veterans Day, and I get an email on my birthday. He's never done that before, ever. Now, in between these gaps where he wasn't responsive, I had such strong reactions. I felt, you know, I just wanted to do something. I felt so much pain and discomfort, and I just wanted to... My mind was telling me all kinds of things. I want to grab him, shake him, and say, come on, buddy, be a man, you know. And I wanted to rush down to his... All these thoughts that I just stayed... I stayed here, right here on the cushion. You see, the cushion isn't just here. It's reflected in everything I do all the time. Yeah. Zazen is a way of living. It's not just sitting here in a cushion for me. So I just stayed. I just stayed with this. I was just about to quote what's it, Jane Fonda. I was just about to quote. You know that saying, that quote. It's an inside joke between Catherine. But I just stay here in this centered place. present with all that I feel. I reach out to the community of like-minded people that are a support to me, and just allow the process to unfold. It's like sitting in sesshin and bearing witness to the feelings that rise and the thoughts that go zooming around, and how when they mix, they form these perceptions that I grab onto as absolute facts and then want to react to that. I'll show you. If we want the world to be different, it can be. If we're willing to live differently. What are you willing to do? How can I help? The robes are a symbol of my commitment to serve Lord Buddha. And all of this is Buddha. Finished. Thank you.